at the end of the day and I write down, or here are the three things you need to get done tomorrow. Not complicated, just a little sticky note right there in the middle of my desk. Come back in the next morning, I'm like, oh, okay, here are the top three things I need to get today.
Welcome to another episode of the Rogue Startups Podcast with Craig Hewitt and Dave Rodenbaugh. This is a podcast documenting the journey as self-funded business founders and sharing lessons, tips, and tricks for businesses following the same path as ours. The journey is long and winding, but we're glad you're joining us for it. And now it's time to go rogue with Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome back to Rogue Startups. This is episode 40, big milestone for Dave and I. And this week we are catching up on our businesses after our last or live episode was right after the Rhodium weekend. And this week we're kind of digging into updates on our businesses and actually talking about decision fatigue. I think we both had a lot of things running around in our head after the conference and sometimes tough to parse those out into sort of finite priorities. So Dave, how's it going?
Well, I am doing pretty well. I have to say, Rhodium weekend really sort of energized me from a business perspective. I've been spending a lot of time actually trying to figure out if I'm going to acquire another SaaS product. And I actually got really serious probably like the week before Rhodium weekend and engaged with this broker from FEI, great guy by the name of David. And started doing deep due diligence into this process, and we kind of got along in there. And then finally, I figured out, all right, I have to finance a good portion of this deal to make it work. And when I finally got to the financing terms and looked at the income, the net cash flow, and the balance with the SBA loan, all of a sudden it didn't work. So in the end, it was kind of disappointing, but I was definitely excited to get back into that process. I haven't done that in quite a while, so that was a lot of fun, actually. How about yourself?
Yeah, things are good. Things are real good. It's a Rhodium was a really interesting conference for me. It's sort of eye-opening as to, you know, a lot of things we talked about on the show, just of risk actually being quite different with acquiring something, and then not just acquiring something, but acquiring a bigger thing versus a smaller thing, you know, potentially being, quote, safer. So it was pretty interesting and a little bit of shiny object, once I kind of sit back and look at what my business is now and, you know, if I acquire something, you know, how congruent is it towards Podcast Motor? And so trying to parse out a little bit of, you know, how much of that makes sense and what a good opportunity really looks like. I do think it's something I'll do in my future, but I think that at least for right now, what I've realized is that my focus needs to be on making it happen with Podcast Motor and all the things around the brand that we're building. You know, it might not be just our service, but it might be products. It might be other types of products and services that are related to the brand and the audience that we've built with Podcast Motor. But I think that for me, Rhodium was really eye-opening to the opportunity that buying an asset provides, but I don't necessarily want to rely on it as the thing that I'm going to do to kind of, quote, make it. So that was, it's been a process of thinking for the last, whatever, 2 weeks. And it's been nice.
Yeah. I mean, you're so early in Podcast Motor at this point, and you've seen such spectacular growth over the course of just this year alone. You know, I don't think you've really unlocked all the full potential on that, and to, you know, acquire something else and really split your attention at this point might actually be, you know, detrimental to Podcast Motor, which I don't think is one of your goals. So,
yep, for sure.
Well, what else have you been working on? I saw a very exciting tweet from you earlier this week, and I went through and clicked the link, and I was like, holy shit, for $300, you got 4,000 emails? Yeah. How the hell did that happen?
Yeah, so we on Nights and Weekends podcast, Ken and I had on Josh Earle about a month ago, I guess. And, you know, for those of you who don't know, Josh did a giveaway, and he used a plugin from the guys at AppSumo. So Noah Kagan and his team created this plugin called King Sumo, and it's a giveaway plugin. And so what you do is you you put up a giveaway page with the, through this plugin in WordPress, and it introduces an element of virality to it where it, you know, so Dave, you go and you opt in, you enter your email to give, you know, for the giveaway. And in this case, we gave away a Rode Podcaster microphone. It's the mic that Andrew Warner of Mixergy used, a bunch of other really top end podcasters use. It's about $250. So anyways, that's what we were giving away. So we're targeting podcasters specifically, which is a great fit for the sort of email audience that we want to build. But what King Sumo does is it every time that you then share that giveaway and your unique link with people in social media, or if you email it and someone clicks it and then gets back to that page via the unique link that you shared, you get more, I'll say, names in the hat, right? More tickets in the hat, and it increases your chance of winning. So it really encourages sharing and virality. And that's what we saw. So it was really, so we set it up to run for a week, and I'll just share the few things that I learned. One is we set it up to go for a week, and my plan all along was to ask one, I'll say, sort of opinion leader in our space to share it every day. And so I did, and the first one was Paul Jarvis, and he really kind of kicked it off, and he shared it with his group on Twitter, and it started, got us above the, you know, couple hundred mark right away. I did that every day, and people like Mike Tabor and Justin McGill and a bunch of other people, you know, shared, and then Steli Efti shared it one day. And the next 24 hours, we saw it, I think, really go viral. It more than doubled. And this is on like the fourth day of the contest. So we went from like 1,800 to 3,800 entries in a day. And so...
Holy shit!
Yeah, so it worked just like it's supposed to. So, you know, all said and done, we got 4,300... email entries, and so now 4,300 people on my email list, which at the time the contest started was about 85 people. And yeah, I sent the first email out to those people yesterday, and the first, you know, 36 hours have been pretty good performance of the list in terms of opens and unsubscribe. So I think about 5% unsubscribe rate of those people, which is, I think, very good. And about a 30% open rate, which for a very cold list, I think is excellent. And that's just in the first 36 hours. So, yeah, I'm super happy. I mean, and the other thing I did is I did run a little bit of Facebook traffic to it. So it's my first foray into Facebook ads, which something I'll talk about a little bit later, but it's super powerful medium for driving traffic to a site. And we drove people specifically to the giveaway page. And, I think it did good. I mean, I didn't track conversions. I just tracked traffic to the site, but we drove about 150 unique people to the site, for like $80.
Yeah.
So yeah, pretty cool.
Facebook is an amazing traffic source if it's a good fit with your audience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have had excellent success with it on a college registration site because, I mean, you can target people down to graduation years, the school they attend, how close they are to it, all kinds of stuff. I mean, I love the demographic information that you get on Facebook ads. So you can really come up with a very targeted audience on that. It's not a total fit on all audiences. I know other people that have used it for very technical products, customer support stuff, time tracking stuff, and they've just not had a lot of success with like trying to draw in raw customers because Facebook is more of an entertainment oriented medium. So it doesn't tend to get people thinking into a business mode. Like, you know, you're looking for cat pictures on Facebook and you're like, oh yeah, right. I need time tracking right. software. No, I don't need time tracking software. That's totally irrelevant right now. I want more cats. So yeah, you have to be cognizant of what it attracts, but it does work in a retargeting fashion. So if you put yourself up in other places, you just get that little extra reminder on Facebook, like, hey, look, you looked at time tracking software over here on Amazon and this and this and this. So it just kind of reminds you. I know that Ruben Gomez of BidSketch has done that and gotten some fairly good success out of it, if I recall correctly. So yeah, Facebook can definitely work. I'm excited to hear that.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And so, you know, I think that for me now, the thing with the, what I think is a decent size email list is I really got to do something with it, right? I mean, almost 5,000 people on my email list. That on top of some of the things we learned from the small groups at Rhodium around, you know, service businesses all sort of get into products eventually. I'm really kind of looking at different avenues to build and sell products around podcasting. You know, having a good email list is a great way to do that and to do it effectively and essentially free at this point. So really starting in my head to think about what a really good strategy is to build the right product, to market it effectively, and to really build out that revenue funnel to supplement what we're doing on the service side for Podcast Motor. So I feel like honestly, a little bit of pressure, I guess. Now I got this quote big list and I got to make it perform.
Da, da, da.
Well, no, because it's like, you know, it's hilarious. So I get the email from Rob. It's automated, of course, but, you know, from Drip saying, okay, you bumped up into the next class and it goes from $49 to $99 because now I have more than whatever is 1,500 or 2,500 people on my list. And I'm almost bumping up against the next one, which just takes me from $99 to $149 a month for Drip, which is great. I mean, Drip's great. I love it. I'm really going to start using marketing automation, I think, now. But $150 a month, I gotta make that back. And I'm not selling any service from my email list right now. And I don't think I ever have. So, you know, it's really around books and courses and software and things like that that we're looking at doing around podcasting, which is all cool and very consistent with our email list. But, you know, it kind of pressures on to start getting into product mode, for me at least.
Yeah, yeah. So do you have a sense of where people are at on this list and what they're specifically interested in? Are they learning about podcasting? Are they newbies? Are they sort of experienced? I mean, are you thinking about taking a survey or giving them a survey, I should say, so that you can learn a little bit more about them?
Yep. So in our initial email announcing the results of the giveaway, we added just three links at the bottom. Said, you know, tell me a little bit about yourself. And one was like, yeah, I'm practically Andrew Warner, which if they clicked that, it would automatically tag them in Drip as an advanced user. The other one was, I've been at this for a while and I get a show out most weeks, and that would tag them as sort of novice or so. And then the other was like, I'm new to this, but I'm ready to jump in head first, and that would tag them as a beginner. So I haven't gone in to see how many people clicked and how they're tagged. But yeah, based on that and starting to build up those three tags, I'll be able to send more targeted emails to different groups based on different things that I want to promote. So starting to build that out a little. I don't know much about the general populace, and I think starting to really warm the list up to sending them more emails, I'm going to have to provide a lot of value. And then, like you're saying, I will send a survey to ask them like five questions probably. And then that will tailor a lot of my real heavy product development around what my list says. Because it doesn't really matter what podcasters in general want. It really matters what people that I have the ability to communicate with want. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, that's exciting. I'm looking forward to hearing more updates about that in the future here.
Yeah. Yeah. How about you? What's shaking?
Well, you know, since, like I said, from Rhodium Weekend, you know, I got into that acquisition mode and I really ended up kind of splitting my time across a bunch of different things. So, you know, I was in acquisition mode of this new SaaS product that didn't end up working out. So I was spending a lot of time in due diligence and research and competition, Google Trends, you know, all that kind of stuff. But then at the same time, I also had something else pop that I had been working on for a while, but I didn't expect it to take so long. So I was trying to take over a plugin inside of WordPress that had this really sweet slug, like the best possible slug for CRM plugins in WordPress /CRM. Everybody else is adding additional stuff onto theirs, but this is like one of the original ones. And the plugin had been abandoned for 6 years. The guy was uncontactable, and so I finally contacted WordPress.org, and I said, hey, you know, can I have this plugin? And they're like, well, you need to prove how serious you are. You got to go in and fix it. You got to go in and update it to WordPress 4.3 and get rid of all the security vulnerabilities and update the README and blah, blah, blah. So I did all of that. And then finally, you know, it took like two rounds of that and a week waiting in between. And then there was a week initially when they were trying to contact the developer themselves. So here we are, like a month later, after I initiated this contact, I finally got ownership of the plugin. So they turned over the SVN repository to me, to my login. So I just got that pushed out last week, the version that we had actually updated. So I had diverted my AWPCP developer to go and rewrite that plugin or update it for modern times. So then I would have something to start working with. So now I'm the proud owner of a new plugin in the WordPress repository here.
Awesome. And is it free at this point, or is it paid?
It is totally free at the moment.
Okay.
Now, obviously, I have a business model with Business Directory and AWPCP where there's a free plugin, and then eventually that leads to a bunch of paid add-ons that you can get for it. So that's a pretty successful model, and I've been able to hammer that pretty well with Business Directory and AWPCP, so I figured I could work it here. And I even, in the survey that I sent out to my users of both of those plugins, I was asking them about some CRM-like things that they were doing, and I got a pretty good idea of things that were important to them, integrations that they're using, stuff that they want to see. And so my idea was to take over the CRM plugin, build those integrations, and build them in the order in which they've indicated they're important. Like the first one that everybody was saying was like, hey, you have to integrate with MailChimp. I'm like, yep, makes sense.
Sure,
done.
Sure. Yeah.
That's the first one that's going out the door. And, you know, there's a bunch of other stuff too. There's like WooCommerce on there and things that I didn't really expect. Like Constant Contact was actually pretty high on the list. I was like, oh, all right. I kind of thought AWeber would be higher, but no, Constant Contact surprisingly beat it. So the idea at this point is to go and create this ecosystem around the plugin. Then I'm going to use my existing emailing list for BD and AWPCP to promote it to get more people downloading it. And then obviously, since I'm now in the repo and have an advantageous slug, I'll start getting general traffic off of that. You know, I don't have a lot right now. I think the active installs on the plugin is like 600 or something like that, and a good portion of those are old. But it's still very positive to get a hold of that and have a direction to go and something that, you know, speaks to my existing audience and something that I can add additional value to their websites with. But now we've got a lot of work, and so part of what I've struggled with here is trying to balance, all right, so, you know, I've got these other releases that are going on. I had a release of the real estate plugin that I had been delaying for a while, so I shoved that out the door last week. And I've got to do the release for the CRM plugin, and we've been working on a shopping cart upgrade for AWPCP that I've been holding for a long time because it's a major update and it's a pain in the ass to get everybody updated. And then I also wanted to get on regular release cycles for Business Directory because that's kind of what keeps people interested in the plugin. When they see features going out on it all the time, it keeps my customer list active. It keeps people buying stuff because nobody wants a dead plugin. They want stuff that's active and going. So that was one of the things that I have found that truly moves the needle. So anyway, I've got like, what was that? Four different things I'm trying to like balance here. And at the same time, I'm trying to figure out, well, what the hell do I put into CRM and how do I want to structure it? You know, what do the menus look like? What does the workflow look like? All of these ongoing, constant decisions that I'm having to make. And I get to the mid-afternoon when I'm finally ready to sit down and do this, when I feel like I've got everything else off on my plate, and I'm fried. I'm completely and utterly fried, which I think is a great segue into today's topic here, which is decision fatigue. And, you know, do you have this problem? Do you suffer from, you know, just getting mentally exhausted at some point, you know, when your day is not done, but yet you feel like you can't make any more decisions here?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was talking to my wife about this the day before yesterday, because I had a very slow day at my day job. And that's the dynamic that I guess we both share a little bit. But, you know, I had a very slow day at my day job. I actually got a chance to work on podcast stuff for like 6 hours during the workday. And I was like, holy shit, I've done this thing that I only get like 2 hours a day to really work on. I've been doing it almost all day. And it was so much, like you're saying, so much sort of mental energy spent on what should I do? Where should I go next? I want to do this. I want to do that. I have this giant email list. I'm going to do products. I want to do courses and emails and all this kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, I was like, this was a really fucking hard day, right? And in reality, it should have been like the easiest day ever, because I only had really one thing to focus on and not like two separate businesses I'm trying to run at the same time. And yeah, I think what I really sort of found was focusing on just things like you have to do or you really know you should do makes it so much easier. And I think that's jumping the gun a little bit, but yeah, all the questions really sort of wear at you a lot more than doing the work.
Yeah, I think that's just a lot of energy that we end up expending on these mental tasks, and we don't really realize it, because it's not like you're going on a hike or a run or something like that where you can feel your body kind of wear down after a period of time. There's no like little gas gauge on your brain that goes doo doo doo. You know, you're at quarter. Mm-hmm. Quarter of mental energy left, need to refuel soon, you know?
Yeah, no, and I think that the unfortunate thing of what it does is when you, like you're saying, you don't realize that. And so what ends up happening is that you get to a certain point in the day and you start making bad decisions, right? So there's this New York Times article by John Tierney, talks about the backstory is like this Israeli parole board hearing where they found that prisoners who showed up in the morning, 70% of the time received parole, whereas people showed up in the afternoon, especially late in the afternoon, only got parole 10% of the time, right? So what happened is the judges were just sort of worn out by the end of the day, and they just didn't make sound decisions. I mean, those numbers are too far skewed to be random, right? So there was a definite impact on sort of reasonable decision-making process just as a factor of so many decisions being made throughout the day. And I think that's exactly what we're seeing with, you know, decisions relating to our businesses. The more that happen throughout the day start inevitably leading to bad ones later in the day, regardless of sort of how important they are and if it's a good idea to begin with or not.
Right, right. Or the case that I felt last week, which was I was just unable to make decisions at all. I just got to a point where I realized it wasn't good or bad. I just couldn't get there anymore. I couldn't expend that energy to make even a bad decision at that point. So yeah, it was a definite huge struggle. And I realize now, having looked at that and seen some articles and Googling some stuff and found an article on Buffer about this, that this is something that I think all entrepreneurs end up really struggling from. Probably everybody in general struggles from it, but I think entrepreneurs are a little more prone to it because we have to sit there and make decisions more frequently, I think, than a lot of other information workers, if you will, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you're going in and you're deciding, okay, well, what's this logo going to look like? All right, what's this architecture going to look like? All right, what's the standard operating procedure going to look like? And then, you know, those are just the high level questions. And then there's all the other stuff that goes into it below that as well. But even before you get there, I mean, we still make just tons of decisions as human beings during the day. What am I going to have for breakfast? What am I going to wear today? What, do I have to take the kids to school today? You know, all that sort of stuff. You're just constantly asking yourself questions. And if you have this sort of limited mental gas tank, every single decision is costing you a little bit of that gas. And if you're trying to save your mental energy, as it were, to make these bigger, more important business-related decisions, you basically end up exhausting yourself if you're not, you know, making a very careful budget of those decisions to try to avoid that fatigue, right?
Yeah. So I think it would be interesting to sort of get real practical for people listening and for ourselves, even, I think, just sharing ideas back and forth. So I'll list a couple of things that I've found that particularly help me minimize this. You can't avoid it. I think, like you say, in our business,
right,
all of the onus is on us to make all these decisions. So how do you?
I'm going to make no decisions today, and my business run perfectly.
Yeah, not
that's
likely.
Not going to happen.
Not likely. But so how do you make the most efficient decisions? I think is what it is. And for me, the most important thing for me actually is generally sort of being healthy. So, you know, have a glass of wine, not three at night, and try to sleep a decent amount. And if I can, exercise. You know, don't go crazy about it, but just generally sort of be healthy. I think just sets you up at the beginning of the day to be successful. And then from there, the next most important thing is to have, like, we joke a lot about SOPs and frameworks and stuff, but like just a framework for all of the things that you do more than once, right? So we're going to do a podcast. This is exactly how we do a podcast every time, so that you have to think less about it at least, right? So, you know, you're in podcast mode. This is whether you have it written out or you have thought about it once and you typed it out, you can go back and kind of take a mental snapshot of that thing, is have some sort of like a framework or a standard operating procedure to know, this is how I write an email. This is how I record a podcast. This is how I do a video. This is how I communicate with my team, right? I think that really helps reduce like recreating the wheel every time. And then the third is some sort of list. And I don't have a good way of doing that consistently, but I know the people that have lists have a lot less of this decision fatigue that they deal with, because it's all right in front of them on paper.
Right. In fact, I am absolutely one of those list people, and I don't do it consistently, but when I do it, I feel like my day goes more smoothly, because that's, you know, I don't have to sit down and then first thing I have to decide, well, what is it I'm going to do today? If I come back at the end of the day and I write down, or here are the three things you need to get done tomorrow. Not complicated, just a little sticky note right there in the middle of my desk. Come back in the next morning, I'm like, oh, okay, here are the top three things I need to get today. So no matter what I get distracted with or I'm running around, I can always come back and focus. What do I need to do next? Boom, it's right there in front of me. I don't need to think about it anymore.
So nothing fancy, just a sticky note.
Just a sticky note. You know, that's awesome. Great. Yeah. Grab a pen. And I try to keep it pretty simple. Like I've done, you know, I whip out the 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper and I write down like 17 things on there. And that totally goes sideways with me, because I just can't keep all of that in my head. And then I have to start thinking about, well, what's the most important one? What's the priority here? Sticky note, three things. That's what's most effective for me that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I'd like to say, with your healthy comment, the other thing that I would add to that is one of the things that the New York Times article that you had talked about by Tierney, he specifically mentioned that having sort of even glucose levels throughout the day is something that also helps support good decision making. They actually did some experiments and they figured, okay, well, what happens if we feed somebody some sugar and then, you know, put some tough decisions in front of them, do they do better or worse? Or actually, I think the way that they structured it was they basically made them do a bunch of, you know, cognitive work that sort of put load on their brain, got them to a point of sort of mental fatigue, and then they had them do another task after that. And then they broke the group up into two paths. One part of the group had artificial sweeteners and the other part actually took sugar. So there was some real glucose in there. And then they compared their outcome on the next set of tasks. The ones that had the artificial sweetener basically did shit, and the ones that had the glucose actually did much better. And so they realized, okay, well, feeding your brain sugar is obviously not the answer here. What's the real answer? The answer is to have enough supply of glucose for your brain so that it, in the course of its normal mental activity, that it can continue to support that activity. But when it doesn't have that the glucose there to support it, that's when bad decisions started happening. So I would say, in addition to your general healthiness, you need to eat well. And that means, you know, not necessarily eating shitty, sugary foods, you know, have protein in the morning, like my wife always insists, and, you know, eat consistently throughout the day. I try to eat about 3 or 4 meals during the day and keep a couple of them very small. But that way, you know, I constantly have enough glucose in my blood just to function as a human being. And I just feel better. And I feel like I'm able to have better mental output when I do stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think one of the things that the Buffer article talks about, too, is simplifying one thing right now. Do you sort of actively try to manage the complexity of your work life?
Yes, I would actually say that I do. And here's the way that I do it. I know that I tend to be more energetic in the morning. So if I'm going to try to do something that I think requires more thought, more mental process, I try to put it at about 10 o'clock in the morning So that gets me past the email spaz. Oh my God, I have to respond to XYZ. Holy shit, the world's on fire. Please send me this update right now. Ah, your product is broken. Please give me a refund. You know, all that sort of stuff that you have to deal with when you first show up in the morning. I just can't not deal with that. I'm that person. But that's the other thing I'm trying to do is I think that, you know, that 10 o'clock is a good spot, but then it's like from 10 to basically noon is all I really get, because at noon I really need to eat and then my glucose is going down. So I notice that my decision making kind of goes along with that. And then after lunch, I get, you know, a little bit of a burst, but by like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm crap. And so I try to structure it so I push more menial, repetitive stuff to the end of the day. So if I have to do like business bookkeeping, updating accounts, paying bills, stuff that doesn't require a whole lot of thought, just enough that I can sort of muddle through it, I try to structure that to the end of the day, maybe answer mail again, stuff like that. But I try to push the more interesting mental work at the front of the day. How about you?
Yeah, again, it's I don't a lot of days I don't have the luxury of for Podcast Motor and podcasting related business. I don't have the luxury to say I'm going to do this at this time. It's all I do it early in the morning before I have to go to work, or I do it like at night. And so I think in a way it's almost an advantage because I don't have the luxury of saying, oh, this just isn't a good time for me. It's like, shit has to get done. This is the time to do it, or it doesn't get done, and then my business sucks. So I think I'll face this a lot more next year when all of my time is my own, and mentally I'll be making a lot more decisions instead of right now. It's like, this is absolutely, these three things have to get done. And it's just kind of go mode. I think a little bit of it's kind of nice right now. I think if I had to say, I would say my good times are the same. It's early in the morning, right when I really start working, I'll get through email pretty quickly. And then those next, say, 2 hours are my really productive times. And then I do have a time in the middle of the afternoon. And again, primarily it's because I know that my working day is coming to an end, but like probably 2 o'clock. I like to be done by 4 if I can. So like 2 to 4 probably again is like a super productive time to me, just because there's a bit of urgency that like if this doesn't get done, and it's all the way till tomorrow. And you know, my days are a little unpredictable right now. So.
Right. So another one of the tips that Buffer had in there, and I think this is actually, there's two of them that I think go together pretty well. And one of them is that you should make decisions that free you from having to make other decisions. Mm-hmm. So you plan things like meals, your clothes, what you're going to do for entertainment, kind of in advance, and you just sort of stick with that. And, you know, I realized that unconsciously I actually already do this. So I eat the exact same breakfast every single day, with only one exception of a day a week, and that's on Sundays, usually when we have a family breakfast where we're making pancakes. But every other day of the week, I eat fruit and yogurt with granola and a cup of coffee. That's it.
That's amazing. Really?
I do. And, you know, my wife is like, don't you get bored with that? Don't you want to? I'm like, no, it's exactly what I need. It's a good, you know, it's sweet. It's got some protein in it. It's a good balance of food, but it's a decision I don't have to make in the morning. I get up, I make my yogurt and fruit, make my coffee, make the kids breakfast. And it's one less decision I actually had to make. Another perfect example of this. Tell me what Steve Jobs used to wear every single day.
I don't know.
You're not an Apple fanboy. All right.
Oh, I'm not.
Okay. So Steve Jobs would always famously wear a pair of jeans, a certain brand of sneakers, and a black turtleneck every single day. Every single day.
And, makes it easy.
And it does make it easy. And I remember seeing an interview with him as somebody asked him about this. And he's like, I just don't need – this is not an important decision to me. I need something that's comfortable and functional. And after that, I don't really care. And so he literally had a closet filled with black turtlenecks, pairs of jeans, and shoes at the bottom. That's it. So every day he knew exactly what he was going to wear. He didn't have to waste his cognitive energy making that decision in the morning. So that freed him to make other more important decisions, you know?
And clearly
that's a bit of an extreme. I'm not going to go to that level. But for the most part, you know, if you have some sort of repetition or pattern in your life that can help free you from making other decisions that are unnecessary, that's going to reduce your cognitive load and probably help you make better decisions later in the day.
I think that sort of relates to the frameworks concept that we were talking about a little bit earlier. It's just if you take all the guesswork out of something, like what you wear or what you eat, that just, like you're saying, frees up that mental capacity for later in the day.
Right. And if that bores you, you could like go and say, like, if I said, okay, this is all we're going to eat for the rest of the week is this one meal, my wife would be like, that sucks. I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, you could obviously come up with a week's long plan to say, here's what we're having for breakfast and here's what we're having for lunch and here's what we're having for dinner and rotate it however you want. But boom, that decision is now made. You can even post it up in the fridge. So anybody wants to ask, hey, what's for dinner? Go look in the fridge.
Yeah. And I think that is a good point, though, is that you alluded to, is that it could introduce more stress to people who that wouldn't work for. Right. So your wife would probably get more sort of decision fatigue or burnout from eating the same thing every day.
Yes.
Because she would start thinking about, oh, my God, I'm eating granola and fruit again and yogurt, and sort of distract her from everything else, as opposed to you. You're saying, hey, this is great. I don't have to worry about it.
Exactly. Exactly. You have to do what's going to work for you. It wouldn't work for my wife. But here's another example of something that does actually help other people. So another one of the buffer tips was that you should help others with their decision. Like the worst thing that you could ever go and say to another person is, I don't know, whatever you want is fine with me. Because all that does is shove the decision back on them. Mm. So my wife comes to me and asks me questions, not just what do you want for dinner or what do you think about this? And one of the things that I think is really great about our relationship is that I'll just tell her exactly what's on my mind. You know, I'll be blunt about it. And she knows that she's going to get an opinion or a decision out of me. Now, sometimes she'll come to me and say, well, what do you think of, you know, this pair of shoes versus this pair of shoes? And I'll pick one. And then she'll pick the exact opposite one that I picked. But it doesn't really matter to me because she wanted to hear some other opinion about that. And so then it freed up whatever mental blockage she had to make the choice that she wanted to make. So by helping others make the decision, you're helping to free up some of their mental resources as well. So
not necessarily making the decision for them.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. I have one last one. And we talked about this a little bit with our, you know, getting through the grind episode is choosing activities or products or, you know, initiatives, I guess, that energize you instead of drain your energy. And I think you talked about email and support. And for me, it's the same kind of thing with, you know, sort of customer requests and things like that. I think that all these things are things that have to get done, right? You have to answer support emails and make sure that your plugins are working for people. I have to make sure that the product that we're supplying to our customers is meets their standards. And these are all things that in a one-off basis are not super hard, right? Answering an email or me answering a question about how a podcast turned out for somebody is not hard. Answering 20 of them every day gets to be a little tough. So finding a way and a framework and a methodology and a system for doing that while reducing the stress that it puts on your brain is super important, because a lot of these things that are tough sometimes actually end up being the things that are like the most important to your business. I know you've said in the past that like the reason that people buy your plugins and come back is because your support is so good. If you had a shitty system for doing that, you just wouldn't do as good a job. And then in return, your business would suffer from it, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But if you can put it, you know, that's one of the goals that I have here in the next few weeks is a standard operating procedure for my customer support. And then with that in place, I'm going to go out and actively hire somebody that I know can execute to that and then add their own, you know, personality and empathy and all the other support skills that they need. But if I can give them that framework, that helps to make them successful by freeing them up from, well, what should I be doing now? Is this the right answer? How should I really answer this kind of email? Well, what if the customer asks for a refund? What leeway do I have on that? All of those questions and decisions are taxing on them as well. So you want to make somebody else successful. That's where a standard operating procedure can definitely help that. So that's definitely one thing I have to put in place to make that easier for sure.
Now, I would suppose that even when you're doing support in the future, having all that written down will make your job easier. because you've answered all those questions once.
Yes. Yes. Instead of keeping them in my head, which can be another way to drain yourself too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I went through a similar thing with onboarding our producer. Is, I mean, every show we have is different, right? And so how do you do this? And how do you put the media player in for this? And where do they host this? And how do you log in? And do you put a tweet in for that or the other? Now that I've offloaded almost all of that to her, it's great. I mean, the production side of our business is relatively easy for established shows. And it's, my stress level has gone down, whatever, almost to zero around the day-to-day stuff.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the question I would pose to all of our listeners at this point is, what tricks do you have for avoiding decision fatigue? What things do you do to structure your day or pre-make decisions or pre-plan things that help sort of reduce your own cognitive load and make you more successful? We would love to hear about that in the comments. And if you're so inclined, please head on over to iTunes and give us a rating on the show. If you've been listening for a while and you think it's great, let us know. And if there's something you think we could improve, drop us a comment in the comments as well. We'd love to hear from you either way.
I have one thing to add before we head out for this episode. We are interviewing Matthew Paulson. Matt is a sort of expert email marketer. We're interviewing him early next week. So if anybody has questions specifically they would like to ask Matt, shoot us an email, podcast@roguestartups.com, and we'll ask Matt your question on the air next week. So shoot us an email or shoot us a tweet, and we'll ask Matt in our upcoming episode. All right. Thanks, Dave. We'll see you guys next time.
All right. See you, Craig.
And that's our episode for this week. If you have any questions or comments, please let us know at podcast@roguestartups.com. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Rogue Startups. And be sure to visit roguestartups.com for full show notes on each episode. If you're enjoying the show, we'd sure appreciate a review in iTunes. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.